This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the current state of the labor market through the lens of a long-standing debate around the existence and impact of a skills gap in the workforce. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment. We will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We're joined by three guests. Chauncey Lennon is Vice President for the Future of Learning and Work at the Lumina Foundation. Welcome, Chauncey. And welcome to Jason Kloth, President and CEO of Ascend Indiana. Hi, Jason.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Larry Michel is Distinguished Fellow and former President of the Economic Policy Institute. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Chauncey, we're going to start with you. Do we have you, Chauncey?
I'm here. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. So, Chauncey, how do you define the skills gap concept?
So that's a great question to start with, because I think part of the challenge is that there's not a sort of easy or particularly clear definition of the skills gap. There's in many respects no real agreement about exactly how you would define it and how you would measure it, and the data you would use to measure it is largely indirect. So in my mind, the skills gap actually ends up being more of a version of Baskin-Robbins 31 flavors. It can mean almost anything to anybody. Sometimes it's about saying, it's spoken from the employer's perspective, and the employers are making the case that they can't seemingly find the kind of workers, the workers with the kinds of skills they're looking for. Sometimes people are talking about the fact that we haven't been investing in post-secondary education, so we're not producing the talent pipelines that we need. Sometimes it has to do with the challenge of the rising cost of education. People don't get access to credentials. Sometimes it has to do with the generational change, that industry skill demands are shifting and, a certain generation of workers have retired and we haven't invested in training the next generation. Sometimes it's talking about the rapidly changing skill demands and the failure of education training providers to actually train enough people to the new kinds of skill requirements that are in demand. So I think at its core, the question becomes: if you're going to talk about the skills gap, you should start by saying, "Here's what I mean by skills gap."
Okay, the way it's sort of breaking down in my head is that there are things we will need to know for the future economy that not enough people do yet, and that's where the gap is. There's a gap in skills to fill those needs. I guess that's one definition of the many.
That's exactly right. There's a slight challenge there, because sometimes it's hard to know exactly what we mean by skills, and that's true on both sides of the equation. That's true. Sometimes employers can't actually give us a real clear signal about what skills they're looking for. Sometimes it's not because workers aren't trying to figure it out. It's just they're caught in the fog. Today's the American labor market has over 730,000 unique credentials. It's very hard to navigate through, that many potential credentials that employers might want. Then in some respects, it's because, we haven't created enough people with those skills. And so, there's some validity of the employer saying, I need to hire somebody with this specific license or this specific certification, and we just don't have those many people, that we don't have enough of those people in my specific labor market.
How valuable do you think the skills gap is as a concept to talk about, and I guess as a way to see certain issues in the labor market?
I think in some ways, if you're trying to understand what's happening in the labor market, I'm not sure it's the most valuable concept. There's lots of other things that we could be talking about. The reality is labor markets are dynamic and they vary by region. And so it's very hard to speak generally. I think it's useful to think about, are we investing enough in growing the talent that we need to feed local and regional industries? I think that's an important way to think about the skills gap. I think to think of it as something that explains to us, that we know what employers want and we've just failed to produce the right kind of workers, that's probably the least useful way to think about the skills gap.
Jason Kloth, do you agree on the definitions Chauncey is working with for the skills gap?
Yeah, I agree with much of what Chauncey shared. My basic perception is that demand in the labor market for more highly educated workers and workers with specific sets of knowledge and skills is increasing at a rapid rate, perhaps the most rapid rate in history. But the supply of workers with that level of education and the specific set of knowledge and skills that employers are looking for has not kept pace. So in central Indiana, it's forecasted that 60% of jobs would require some level of post-secondary education. Only about 42% of the working age adult population has that level of educational attainment. At the same time, the demand for middle skill work or less skilled work that would require a high school degree, those jobs that pay middle income wages and have healthcare benefits traditionally associated with manufacturing, we're seeing a decline in those while having.
Jason, I believe we lost you. Chauncey, go right ahead. We got you back.
So while having, I think, a fairly steady supply of people with just a high school degree, and so as those curves run away from each other, they create income inequality. And I think at a macro level, we're seeing this as a function of free trade and globalization, which has largely been talked about, but also certainly the automation of work, the digitization of work that's requiring a different type of worker with more education. And then I think this will only accelerate with the advent of artificial intelligence and machine learning. So I agree with Chauncey's statement, but think it's a useful framework for thinking at a macro level.
We've got some noise on the line. If anyone's speaking and or if anyone's not speaking, could they mute their line, please? Jason, let's fit Indiana into this. Is Indiana unique in any way in this conversation?
Well, I think Indiana, in some respects, is more vulnerable than other states because of the concentration of manufacturing jobs that made up those jobs that had higher wages that oftentimes included benefits, healthcare benefits, and retirement benefits. But when I look at Indiana's labor market, I think, as it relates to higher education, it's certainly true that too few students are graduating from high school and ultimately enrolling in post-secondary education. So in central Indiana, that's about 62% of the population. But 25% of those individuals require remediation in basic English language arts and math. Too few students concentrate in sectors, their degrees or their credentials in sectors that pay good wages, the advanced sectors of our economy. Too few persist and go on to complete and ultimately find a job and stay in Indiana. And all of those statistics, when you look at them by racial subgroup or socioeconomic subgroup, you see outcomes that are disproportionately not where we want them to be. And so, I think we've got to address all of those underlying causes, and there are practical ways to address those underlying causes, and then there are public policy implications for addressing those underlying causes. And so I think it's useful from that perspective.
Larry, Michelle, I want to make sure we get to you. You're on a bit of another part of the spectrum when it comes to this definition and the argument. How do you understand the term? What is a skills gap?
Well, to economists like me, a skills gap means that there's more demand by employers for particular skills, and I think most of the time it's referring to people with a college degree, so they can't find sufficient numbers of college grads or other types of skills for the work that they have. Let me just say what I think are the two major problems we face in the labor market. I think we may all even be able to agree with that. First, we have this pandemic caused really high unemployment. That's the highest since the Great Depression in the 1930s. So it seems to me priority number one is getting people back to work. And on that, I don't think skills, whatever skills the workforce has much to do at all with why we have very high unemployment. The second issue, in my view, is the fact that there's been very little growth in wages and benefits for the vast majority of workers in 40 years, and a growth of wage inequality where the wage growth has primarily gone to the upper 10% and, in fact, primarily to the upper 1%. I don't think any of that growth of inequality or the stagnation of wages has anything to do with skills. That being said, you know, there's a case for skills, but I think the skill gap is at best unhelpful and at worst a very bad distraction. All of the evidence, so how does a normal human being assess whether there's a skills gap? Well, first is if there's a shortage of skills, you would expect the employers to increasingly want to pay more for the people that have those skills. So we should be seeing people with a college degree getting really superlative wage growth, and especially relative to people without a college degree. In fact, over the last 25 years, we've seen very little growth in the premium of college grads over other people, and in fact, much less growth than we saw in the prior 25 years. We have study after study now that shows that the actual increase in the demand for college grads is actually been growing at a historically slow level for 25 years. So, for instance, three economists who were in the forefront of arguing for a skills gap, Larry Katz at Harvard, Claudia Golden at Harvard, and David Auder from MIT, came out with a study this January that showed, and they say, that the demand for college graduates is growing 30 to 40% slower since 1995.
Hey, Larry, I think we may have to continue this when we come back from a break. I'm so sorry to interrupt you.
I have a few more points there, but thanks.
Sure. We'll make sure we get to them after a break. We're talking today about the labor market. If you have questions or comments, we are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. We'd love to hear you this hour. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about arguments for and against the concept of a skills gap and the current state of the labor market. And we have with us Chauncey Lennon, Vice President for the Future of Learning and Work at the Lumina Foundation. Jason Cloth is President and CEO of Ascend Indiana. Larry Michel is Distinguished Fellow and former President of the Economic Policy Institute. And we would love your questions and comments on the topic. We are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. And just before the break, Larry, we were speaking about your concept of the skills gap and whether or not it exists. And to me, it sounds like you are on the side that says it's a problem of incentive rather than where the labor market is right now, perhaps.
Well, I'd say the problem is not skills that the workers bring to the table, but it's the power that employers have and the fact that they're not putting money into workers and their wages. So let me just say a little bit more about why I think this skills gap idea is unhelpful, and then maybe we can shift to useful ways to make a case for people to have more education and training, which I think that there are good reasons for thinking about that. But it's not about the skills gap. It's certainly not about anything to do with solving the problem of poor wage growth or inequality. So I've already said that if you look at the data, when economists look at the data on people going to college and wages, and they infer what the growth of the demand for skills, that they actually are finding that the growth is really at historically low levels. It's also true that although many people claim that we're undergoing very fast automation, it's a widely held view among economists, which is not always, I don't necessarily agree with widely held views of economists, but this time I'll go with it. You know, that automation is actually been growing very slowly. We know that productivity growth, output per hour, is growing very slowly. We know that investment of capital in the workplace is growing very slowly. We know that information equipment, computers in the workplace is growing very slowly. Software investment is growing very slowly. And we see that the degree to which occupations turn, right? If you have a lot of automation that's generating demand for skills, you expect a lot of occupations to be in decline and others to be growing. We actually see that churn happening at a very, very slow rate, perhaps the slowest in 150 years. So my last kind of indicator that I want to give to people about how they can assess whether there's a skills gap is that if there was a skills gap, especially for college grads, you would expect college grad wages to go up a lot. You would expect people in college to be readily able to get jobs in the summer, after college, which are paying a lot of money. In the late 90s, when it was considered there was a tech boom, companies would pay people with computer skills a lot in the summer in the hopes that they would join them after college. We don't see anything going on with employers really going out of their way to attract college grads. In fact, we see a lot of people earning in internships that they take without getting any wages whatsoever. This is totally incompatible with the idea that somehow there's some vast unmet need for college grads. So these are why I think people should not buy into this. Why might we do training? And a discussion I think we should have is that there are a lot of people who come from communities where they haven't received appropriate education, where there has not been appropriate upward mobility. Giving people access to training, either college degree or some other kind of skill, could help lift working class people, poor people, into a better situation. I think that kind of thing, but providing opportunity, is much more valid way of fighting for training and education than anything that has to do with a skills gap.
Chauncey Lennon, where do you meet Larry's argument?
So, I agree with much of what Larry said. I think, you know, the key point here is not to focus so much on whether there is or isn't a skill gap or how to define a skills gap. It's that for many people, they need more opportunities to attain credentials. That is going to be their ticket to a more stable and successful, path to the middle class. Larry is right that that's not necessarily a guarantee, even with a college degree. But we live in an economy right now where if you don't have training post high school, your opportunities are very, very limited. We also live in a world where there are big racial equity gaps. So we compare whites, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans. We see that many groups are attaining at rates much lower than whites and Asian Americans in particular. And so we need to think about this as a question in terms of how we help everybody realize that they need to get on a path towards a credential. That credential doesn't necessarily need to be a BA, but it does need to be a credential that is tied to, an area of the labor market that's growing.
Again, we've got some noise on the line. If you're not speaking, please mute your microphone. Sorry about that, Chauncey.
Sure. We need to help people get a credential that has labor market value. We have a system right now that doesn't really make any of that clear and doesn't really help people navigate towards that. And again, to echo one of Larry's points, that's especially important because it's not simply that getting a college degree is the ticket to the kind of economic returns people think it is.
Well, are there certain industries or even geographic areas where a skills gap, so-called skills gap, might be more prevalent?
I think one place to look at, this question of, where credentials, specific kinds of credentials or specific kinds of training, is in demand because employers can't find certain kinds of workers is very specifically in areas. Certain industries, healthcare comes to mind, where, employers can't hire people unless they have the right kind of credential, typically some kind of certification or license. When we can make it really clear that, you need that and employers are able to show us that they can't hire and they can't find enough people to hire those credentials, that's very useful. It's very useful as a sign to workers, as a sign to education training providers, and that's where we need to create more opportunities, grow the sort of training and education slots. That is also dynamic, and that changes over time. So we need to really remember always that you've got to look to the labor market data and sort of hold that up against the reality of what we're seeing as we help people navigate through some of these challenging questions.
We're talking about the challenges of the current. This is Larry. Go right ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I'm all for providing the kind of skills that Chauncey wants to provide, but my concern is, I think frequently the focus on skills and more education obscures really other important dimensions that are going on. So let's take racial inequality. You know, the gap between black unemployment and white unemployment is very much there, even among college graduates. Black college graduates make a lot less money than white college graduates. They're much more likely to be unemployed. In fact, I think a black college graduate will have more unemployment than a white high school graduate. So as much as, I think I would want to provide people with more education, more access to skills, I don't want any conversation to take place that doesn't center the fact that there's systematic discrimination, that we have a systematic problem in this country where employers have way too much power relative to workers, so that workers are not getting their fair share of income. We see the share of income going to wages been in decline for 20 years, except for maybe the last few years when unemployment went down. So there's really systemic issues of employer power, really being able to suppress wages that have, had nothing to do with skills, that I don't want to see not enter into every conversation we have about the labor market, as much as I'm all for providing all the skills and education that Chauncey, wants to provide and that Jason wants to provide.
We're talking
and
with...
Let me just add, can I just get in? Sorry.
Go right ahead, Chauncey.
Thank you. I just want to say that, I couldn't agree more with Larry on this point. None of what we say when we talk about the value of skills is to say that education and training alone are going to solve our labor market problem, right? The point is that we need to be thinking about all these issues of job quality, aggregate demand. We have all these things that are structured labor market. There's a lot of people, of course, for whom education and training is the thing they focus on. But, there's never an argument that that alone is what is going to address the deep and pervasive challenges we face.
Chauncey Lennon is Vice President for the Future of Learning and Work at the Lumina Foundation. We also have with us Larry Michel, Distinguished Fellow and former President of the Economic Policy Institute. And Jason Kloth is President and CEO of Ascend Indiana. Today we're talking about the challenges of the current labor market and the concept of a skills gap. And we have a question from Rick on Facebook. And if you would like to jump into the conversation, we are on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Rick on Facebook asks, why is college enrollment growing with demand for graduates fading? That kind of gets at a lot of what we're talking about. It's a very simple question, but it's one that I think needs to be brought up. Jason, would you like to meet Rick's question? Why is college enrollment growing with demand for graduates fading?
Well, I think, first of all, I do think wage premiums for college graduates are higher, and I'm speaking to one study, but, 81, what I saw was the wage premium was 81% above that of an individual with a high school degree, which at a macro level would be signaling that. I think that we are seeing increased demand for highly educated workers, specifically in the advanced sectors, and Chauncey spoke to healthcare, where there's clear credentials and licenses that can be linked to specific jobs and specific wages. But I think you're also going to see that in the life sciences and in information technology and the like. So I think that is some signal to individuals that they need to obtain additional education. I think what's troubling is if we look at Indiana, we haven't seen that significant of an increase in enrollment and in graduation for college graduates. And I'm looking at or thinking about national data, but you see a significant increase amongst Asian Americans in enrolling in higher education. I think it grew by 5%, while African American enrollment dropped by 8%, and white enrollment dropped by 2%. So I don't think we've universally seen the level of increase in enrollment that I think would be beneficial.
What keeps ringing in my head, Jason, is this argument from Larry that it's an issue of incentive. The fact that the economy has done well, pandemic aside, but it has gone to the top 10 and specifically to the top 1%. And so the skills gap is maybe a problem of incentive. The fact that if we, I guess, offered people more money for the jobs that we need, then we would more easily find those people.
Well, I should just start by saying I agree with both Chauncey and Larry that the conversation needs to be more robust than simply focusing on demand in the labor market and supply of individuals with post-secondary education and certain sets of knowledge and skills. I mean, there's no question that wealth inequality is growing and being concentrated in fewer and fewer hands, particularly those that have the ability to invest in stocks and have other assets. That's certainly not the majority of Americans. Income inequality is growing, and as Larry spoke to, that's disproportionately benefiting white families over people of color. And so all of that, I think, is very real and needs to be discussed as well. It's also true, as Larry shared, that, you know, the average white college graduate makes $4,000 more per year than the average African-American college graduate. And so all of this, I think, needs to be part of the conversation. But I think the supply relative to the demand is helpful for policymakers and for practical have practical implications for the work that we do at Ascend.
We have a listener comment from Andrew on Facebook. And Chauncey, I think I'm going to toss this one to you. Andrew says, I'm an electrician and my employer paid for and supported my education. I feel like if employers take on more of the education and investment in training, they could fill more jobs. Chauncey, what do you say to Andrew?
So, you know, I think, first of all, that's great to hear. We would certainly like to live in a world where employers were investing more and helping their workers get the kinds of skills and credentials that will allow them to, you know, move on in their careers and, you know, help their employers, you know, keep the kind of talent they need to be competitive. I think the reality is, though, that we don't have enough of that. To the extent we have it, it often varies by industry. So certain industries are better about sort of using a kind of framework of certificates and certifications, investing in their employees as they climb that ladder. There's more we could do, I think, to incentivize employers to be more proactive. Perhaps the best incentive we had was the chapter that just ended. We had very tight labor markets. Where we're headed now is a place where employer interest in some of these issues is likely to go way down. So we've got to think about having a more robust policy framework that will, I think, incentivize greater investment on the part of employers. One thing to keep in mind is that, we don't spend enough as a country on training. It's about $4 billion. That's really just a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the demand out there for training. And so we want to think about increasing our investment, but we need to recognize that it's employers who are the largest investors in training. They often focus that investment on higher wage, higher skilled workers. And so the more we can get them to think about how they invest those dollars in all kinds of workers, the better off I think we're all going to be.
If I might, I think just to speak to a little bit of what Chauncey's saying, we've had the good fortune of working alongside a number of employers in central Indiana to really bring the employer need and to understand the knowledge, skills, and ability required of a specific role within their company and then higher education to build out the content in ways that it's mutually beneficial to the employer who's getting the type of worker with the level of education they need, beneficial to the higher education institution because they're increasing their enrollment, but ultimately beneficial to the job seeker. So we worked alongside Roche Diagnostics to build out a pipeline of technicians with the University of Indianapolis. And ultimately, you know, Roche is able to quantify that benefit, and they're investing more than $700,000 a year in scholarships and work-based learning opportunities for students that ultimately result in a direct employment. We built a nursing program with community health. We built a pipeline of licensed clinical social workers focused on substance use disorder. We're working with United Healthcare to build a pipeline of sales associates with a background in business. And we think there are ways to create these win-win-win scenarios, but we don't really have a policy framework to support that, nor do we have the practical infrastructure in most labor markets to effectively bring employers and education providers together at scale.
Jason, we need to take a break. There's a lot more to talk about. We will keep the conversation going after this break. We're talking to experts about the labor market and conversations around the possible existence and impact of a skills gap in the workforce. We are back in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on debates around the concept of a skills gap and larger conversations on the current state of the labor market. We're on with Larry Michel, Distinguished Fellow and former president of the Economic Policy Institute. Chauncey Lennon is with us, Vice President of for the Future of Learning and Work at the Lumina Foundation. And Jason Cloth is President and CEO of Ascend Indiana. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. And Jason, just before the break, before I interrupted you, before we had to go, I want to let you finish the point, but I want to give you something else to chew on. How much of these conversations about skills gap and making sure workers can fill new jobs, how much of that is impacted by automation? Is that, would you say, perhaps the most significant disruption happening right now?
Yeah, so I think certainly, you know, automation, the digitization of work is having an impact, and it's likely to have an outsized impact on certain industries that are more vulnerable to that automation over time, specifically manufacturing as a advanced sector of our economy that's quite large. And so I think the mix of knowledge, skills, and ability that will be required to fill the jobs that are created, maybe moving from more manual labor work to machining work that requires a higher level of math, additional expertise, will become more important, and only more important at time over time with the advent of artificial intelligence and the digitization of work.
We have a voicemail from a listener named Kim. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name's Kim, and I own a business in Hartford City, Indiana. And, you know, they were talking about wage gap, or not wage gap, but the skills gap. And I think it's how we train these people. You know, they're coming out of college and not prepared for the workforce, or coming out of high school and not prepared for the workforce. So as an employer, it's hard to justify increasing wages for someone with a degree when they don't have the skills to do the job. They need to be taught more practical skills to be able to be useful and valuable in a working environment, like incentive and leadership and just how to show up on time and do the job. And I think the employers would be willing to put their money where their mouth is. Thanks. Have a great day.
Chauncey, where do you meet Kim's comment there?
So, you know, I think there are many employers who are stepping into this issue and realizing that, you know, they're not going to find the talent they need unless they make an effort to partner with community colleges, make an effort to help education training providers and job seekers understand, you know, what the skills are that they're looking for, where to get those skills, how to learn, get some experience. What employers like to hire most are people who really have on-the-job experience. But if we don't have things like internship opportunities, work-based learning opportunities, that's not going to happen. So, you know, this is something that, you know, has to, absent employers being more engaged, we can't really develop a system that helps us target training towards the needs of employers. Let me add another point, though, which is that in going back to Larry's point about the sort of flattening of the returns to a college degree, you know, I think the reality is the labor market is you know, getting more more treacherous. There's more risk, and that involves needing more skills when you come out of high school to get a job. And it means that there are fewer jobs that are going to pay decent wages, even with a college degree. So you need to be able to navigate. You have to make choices and understand which sectors, which occupations have growing wages and returns to credentials. We don't do enough of that to help people understand, how they can make how they're in a position to make informed choices.
We have another listener voicemail from Danny. Let's listen. Oh, hold on just a moment, Larry. Let's hear from Danny.
Okay. Hi, my name's Danny. 40 years ago, the companies trained people how to do things. You work your way up through the company, get management jobs and stuff like that. You didn't all of a sudden have to have a college graduate to be a manager at a company. You worked your way there to be one. So there is no skills gap. It's just the company changed the way they want to do stuff, probably because the government stepped in and did something about college degrees. Thank you.
Jason, can you respond to Danny, and then we'll get Larry's response, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, I think, true that over the past several decades, the relationship between employers and you know, workers has shifted, and I think Larry is speaking, I think rightfully, to what is the nature of the relationship between the employer and the worker over time. I think employers investing in their workforce, both in training, in upskilling, in getting the additional knowledge that's required to take that next role is very, very important. I think my biggest point, though, is that there's really not a mechanism within the labor market to bring employers together to those education providers in the midst of everything that's happening day to day within their respective companies. So I think if we want to reforge that relationship, there needs to be, one, that mechanism, and two, a policy framework to support bringing employers alongside education providers to develop content that's mutually beneficial to them and to the individual that's going to work there.
Larry, I want to make sure I come to you, but Jason, I want to stick with you for just a moment. Do you think that simplifying these problems to a degree, and depending on what you're talking about, do you think simplifying these problems does them a bit of a disservice?
Yeah, so as I said before, I think both things can be true and important at the same time, that it's important that we increase the number of individuals with a post-secondary credential, that we give people, as Chauncey said, the information required so that they can make judicious choices about the education that they're receiving, so that we see a concentration in degrees that lead to good employment, to good and promising jobs, as the Brookings Institute would say. And then ultimately help folks find their ways to internships and full-time employment, which we don't really have good infrastructure for doing today. And so I think that is true in this discussion of the skills gap. But I also think there are structural, fundamental questions that Larry's raising that need to be talked about from a policy perspective as well. You know, if we're going to see a society where, you know, everyone is benefiting.
All right, Larry, we're finally going to come back to you. Thank you for your patience. You've got a lot of responses, I'm sure, up in the queue to what we've been talking about. Larry, how would you respond to the things we've been bringing up?
you know, I think my colleagues on the phone are right about the no mechanism for employers to really think about the workforce training that they need and partner with people. You know, the fact is that business associations in our country, unlike other advanced nations, primarily focus on two things. One is getting tax cuts, and two is kind of deregulation or bashing unions or trying to minimize labor standards like higher minimum wages. And they do not focus on how do they get together to improve the way they do business. And in fact, the employers over time, I think Danny makes a great point about employers used to provide what we economists call an internal labor market. You get in at certain points, they train you, you move up to a very credentialized, unnecessarily credentialized system whereby employers expect to get the people they want with exactly the skills they want at the price they want whenever they want it. And if they don't, they scream shortage. And they're incredibly entitled. And I think part of that leads to employers trying to shift the cost of their training onto the public sector, onto community colleges, onto getting various kinds of subsidies. You know, I'm all for, you know, subsidizing some kinds of education and training, but I think employers increasingly have abandoned it and, in fact, are looking to get subsidized by the public in ways that they ought not. You know, those are some of the things that I think that last I did the small businesswoman who talked, I thought was going not in my head yes when she was saying, you know, that people maybe don't come out of college with the skills that she wants on the job. And I thought, yes, they need to be able to do things like have internal labor markets, have some kind of training. So she got to the point that she said, training people to be willing to show up on time, which I think is just absolutely insulting, you know, to a lot of people who want jobs, a lot of people that have jobs are very willing to they work hard. They're at risk. They're at risk now of disease. And the idea that a major problem is people not being willing to show up. I mean, take the problem. You know, we're here talking about providing more skills for healthcare workers when, you know, we've lost 3 million healthcare jobs over the last 3 or 4 months. So, you know, this is a little bit otherworldly for me. I mean, I'm all for a long-term agenda like this, but it's hard for me to get over the otherworldliness.
We have a listener voicemail.
Larry brings up a...
Jason, go ahead.
I think, Larry, you know, I think of the Swiss model or the German model where business associations really are providing a lot of that functionality as an intermediary between business need and education. And there's investment on the part of employers and youth apprenticeship, which I think is something that I'm excited about expanding here in Indiana. But I think that mechanism is very clearly established in other parts of the world.
We heard from a listener named Karen who left this in our inbox. Let's hear that.
Hi. My name is Karen, and I'm calling from West Lafayette. Underemployment has plagued me and my family for years. When I graduated from Purdue in 1994, most of the jobs were part-time, so I had to leave Indiana and work in Illinois and Virginia and Michigan to get a regular full-time job.
Chauncey, I guess how long and in how many different forms has this problem taken over the years?
So, you know, I think, you know, this has got many dimensions to it. One, again, is, you know, a degree matters, a BA matters, but what that BA is in, you know, what subject you study, also matters and sometimes can matter more. When we look at some of the returns to education, we see, you know, a real pattern where, you know, degrees in STEM fields will pay more, not just, you know, among BAs, but
AA, two-year degrees in STEM fields will often pay more than four-year degrees or BAs in non-STEM fields. So, again, it's cruel, right? It's, we want a labor market that looks very different, that has opportunities for people in some ways, no matter what they studied. But the reality we have here is that, and this is, you know, a trend that is getting worse over time. And, you know, obviously with the onset of the sort of pandemic and the economic upheaval will only get worse, is that the island is shrinking a little bit. And, you know, getting on the island with the skills that are in demand, that will get you a job where you want to live, is getting harder and harder. And we need to do things about that both structurally, and we then need to think about how we help workers as they navigate this difficult arena.
Jason, I want to get your response to a listener comment. Gina wrote on Facebook, "My child was a May graduate from IU with a degree in linguistics. No job and no opportunity for one in the current plague world. They moved out of Indiana and now they're enrolling in truck driving school. Thankfully, most college costs were covered by scholarships." What do you say to Gina, Jason?
Well, I think two things. One, you know, we would love to talk to the student to see if we could be helpful to finding their next step. I think the reality is a lot of employment post-COVID. I mean, we came out of a labor market where, you know, it really favored the job seeker. And I think we've entered into a labor market where, you know, the lion's share of internships that students were depending on, many dried up. Those that were within enterprise level companies, larger companies, were honored but done virtually oftentimes. Offers were rescinded to a lot of graduates as employers and as the economy went into what I heard described as a coma. You know, I think we're going to see that dimmer switch turn back on here over time, and hopefully in a safe way. But I don't think that is an unusual experience for the listener to have had, particularly at this point in time. And I think that's going to affect community college graduates, four-year graduates, for the foreseeable future as we go from, you know, Great Depression era unemployment to hopefully, you know, a V-shaped recovery, though I doubt that that will be the shape of the recovery.
Larry, an hour goes by fast.
Can I add something there?
Go right ahead, please.
Sorry, Matt. So I would just want to underscore, you know, one of Jason's point, which is that, you know, we don't do much to help people in these moments of sort of labor market shock, right? We don't actually have many resources. Provide the kind of navigation that lets people, whether they've just exited school or they've just lost their jobs after years in a certain occupation, you know, help them figure out where they might want to go next. And so, you know, one of the things we need to think of, we need to help support people who've lost income during these during this moment. But we also need to give them the resources they're going to need to reskill and get, you know, back in the labor market in an area that will provide opportunity.
I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today. It's clear we could have done several hours on this topic, and maybe we'll readdress it with this panel again. Chauncey Lennon is Vice President for the Future of Learning and Work at the Lumina Foundation. Thank you, Chauncey.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Jason Kloth, President and CEO of Ascend Indiana. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Larry Mischel is Distinguished Fellow and former President of the Economic Policy Institute. Thanks to you, Larry.
Thanks for having me as well.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed this theme. If you would like a podcast of this show or any past show, it's wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow, we'll have another conversation on the economy in Indiana. We'll get an update on where we're at and how industries across the state are planning for what's coming next. We're on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.